from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Morning, everybody. Adam Spillane in for Sean Pendergast alongside Seth Payne. Byron Matthews with us as well. Good morning, Seth.
Good morning. I'm so happy you made it in. Because you're covering the Astros game last night, and you got about 4 hours of sleep. Damn good showing of you. Thank you.
You know, if you could do two-a-days with Tom Coughlin, I can come in and do a show at 6 o'clock in the morning.
You know, the hardest part about two-a-days when you're a rookie sometimes is that you have these long team meetings with coaches like Coughlin. I'm guessing D'Amico doesn't have really long team meetings, but you're also hydrating hardcore.
Oh God!
So
yeah.
You're sitting there, and you don't want to get up in the middle of a meeting to go to the bathroom. So I remember, that's what I remember of my rookie year. I didn't remember the fights. I didn't remember my first play. I remember sitting in a meeting just with my bladder about to burst, but terrified of Tom Coughlin and afraid to get up and go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you some Tom Coughlin stuff a little bit later in the show, but we've got Astros to talk about. They beat the Pirates last night 5-4. They basically steal a game and avoid a sweep at the hands of the Pittsburgh Pirates. But first, we got to start with the Texans because it's opening day. It is essentially opening day, first preseason game as they take on the Bears at the Hall of Fame game. And I'm wondering, Seth, how much of the, well, actually, first, let's find out who's going to play, because that's, I think, right, when you get into a preseason game, that's the first thing, is like, especially the first one, who's going to play? Here's D'Amico Ryans answering that question.
You guys all see who play on Thursday. I'm not going through a list of who's playing, who's not playing. I'm not going through that list. You guys will see on Thursday who steps out there.
All right, well, that wasn't helpful.
And that was about... That's about as firm, and I would almost call it chippy. It wouldn't be chippy by any other coach's standards, but for D'Amico and how we've come to, you know, see him in press conferences, that was almost a little bit chippy by D'Amico. He was being a firm parent there. He was like setting the boundaries and saying, "And I will go no further."
He sounded very annoyed. I don't know if that's something that's been asked a bunch over the course of the week, but it sounded like it was something that had been asked like 4 or 5 times, and he just like, "I'm done."
You never know with him, too. He might have been on NFL Network or something and been asked that already that morning. And people, Look, it matters for people who are gamblers and people who are like hardcore going into a preseason game trying to – the Sean would call them degenerates, himself being one of them. Like, okay, what are our chances in this game? I think that – I mean, there is an element of if Davis Mills, John Mechie, and Damian Pierce play – and if this team is genuinely better than it was last year, the depth should matter, right? Like in preseason games in that first quarter when it's your backups playing versus the other team's backups, you'd like to think, okay, Davis Mills in his second year in a system, Damian Pierce perhaps rejuvenated and understanding the offense better, John Mechie looking the way he's looked at times during training camp, that these guys might put it on the Bears' backups. Because the Bears aren't playing hardly any of their starters either.
Well, those three guys are reportedly playing. That's Aaron Wilson from Channel 2 saying that's going to happen. And for me, Mills is interesting, and this is what he had to say the other day, just about his playing time and what he's looking to do in this game.
We haven't been told any of our playing time. I'll be ready if my number's called. I've been putting in a lot of really good work with our players throughout training camp so far and OTAs. And when I get my chance to go out there and perform, I'm ready and showcase all the guys around me. It's going to be fun.
Does he have more to prove than maybe anybody on the field tonight?
That's a really good question. I think that's especially given his rocky road and given the fact that he had two different coordinators in the first 2 years and then last year going into that Tennessee game, the first game after C.J. Stroud was injured, it was assumed he was going to be the starter by a lot of people, and then all of a sudden, lo and behold, it ends up being Case Keenum. Yeah, I think he does. I think honestly, both them, the Texans, and I think there are other people around the league that might be looking at him as a, like, he's probably up on people's boards by teams that run a Kyle Shanahan type system that might not feel great about their backups. They'll be watching him during training camp and just thinking, all right, maybe the Texans might want to deal this guy. If our guy gets injured, this might be a guy we're thinking about. I think he's got a lot to prove in terms of making the team as the bona fide backup for the Texans, but also he does have an opportunity to perhaps slide into a starting role somewhere else if they end up having an injury at their starting quarterback. So yeah, and he's going to be out there doing it against backup secondaries, backup linebackers, while still connecting with perhaps John Mechie, a guy that he's been able to form a little bit of a connection with over the last couple of years.
And also with Damian Pierce, who he handed the ball off to quite a bit a couple of seasons ago. Remember, he's in the last year of his contract, and so this is a great audition for him, not just for the rest of this season to prove that he should be C.J. Stroud's backup quarterback, but it's also a chance for him to prove around the league that he's worth an investment in the offseason, whether it's a team that might need a starting quarterback or a team that wants an upgrade at the backup position. So to me, it feels like he has more to gain today than anybody, but I also feel like he does have a lot to lose, because if he plays poorly and he shows that, you know, he can't play at this level, then maybe the Texans have to look for another backup, or maybe it's just Case Keenum jumps over him.
Yeah, from the Texans' perspective, they do have to make some decisions on him. It's if they didn't trust him enough to go in as the first backup last year, what's changed between then and now? Is he grasped the system that much more? And, you know, if you think about him almost like a poor man's Alex Smith. So Alex Smith was a number one overall pick, but he played with three different coordinators in his first 3 years. Finally, when Harbaugh came in, it just kind of clicked for Alex Smith, and Alex Smith became a much different quarterback. I think that you could make that same argument with Davis Mills. Perhaps he's not the same talent that Alex Smith is, obviously, but just by virtue of being in a better system and having a relationship with a coordinator, can Bobby Slowick be the guy that transforms him? That there's a chance. We've seen the good sides of Davis Mills. We've seen him make some great throws. It's always just been a matter of consistency. And if you have this system in command, you know, we saw it with Matt Schaub. Matt Schaub played way above his skill level in a lot of regards. I think if Matt Schaub had gone to another system or had stayed in Atlanta or anywhere else instead of playing with Gary Kubiak and gone into this offense, the kind of, if you do it right, it gives you answers to the test. It gives you the easy throws that are there for the taking. Then you can actually, you can get way more out of a quarterback than people expect. And yeah, I think the Texans, I mean, right now, what's your gut tell you about who you'd want to go in a week 8 backup start? Would you want Case Keenum or Davis Mills or Tim Boyle?
Well, after watching Keenum in the two starts that he made last year, I would say I don't want Keenum. But at the same time, it's like you got to see something from Mills for him to prove that he can like do better. And I don't know, like the fact that the Texans did not play him in those two games makes you feel like they didn't believe that he could do better. So I think that's what he needs to do in this game today and in the games that follow. Like he needs to prove that he would be an upgrade over Case Keenum. And listen, it's backup quarterback. It's not the most important position in the world. It certainly does get neglected, but it's not easy to keep a quarterback on the field for all 17 games. The Texans could not do it last year. They needed a backup quarterback for two of those starts, and they were big games. Those were games in November and in December. So you need to have somebody viable who can run your offense and give you a chance to win.
Right, yeah. And one of the things that Case did, where you could see the deficiencies, you could see that there's just some throws that he can't make, but he kept it a very smooth operation. I thought he made some checks in the run game that at that point in his development, C.J. Stroud wasn't really making. Like that, and that's one thing veteran quarterbacks do and take on more of. CJ's talked about it, that you gotta command the whole offense. You gotta be in control of the run game as well as the pass game. They just weren't at the point in CJ's development last year where he was really going to be able to do all that. I expect that he will be this year. And I guess the other big dynamic too is if the defense is genuinely improved and if the pass rush is as good as it could be, then it really becomes, all right, we just need a game manager to come in here. We need a guy that's not going to make stupid mistakes and not going to screw it and maybe try to win it in the fourth quarter. Right now, I feel better about Case Keenum, especially if the defense is actually better, if the defense can be if they can rise to the occasion and hold the other team to 10 points while CJ's out.
And so we've seen a couple scuffles here towards, in the last week or so in camp. How much is everyone just excited to see somebody in a different uniform for this first preseason game?
Oh, I felt that just even standing out there in the heat watching, I was getting to that point. And it felt like this last practice, it almost felt like you could see it in the players. It gets stale seeing other guys. That's one of the reasons I like having the veterans play at least a few snaps in the preseason, because at the very least, it's A, you get up to speed more quickly. There's just a certain, no matter how hard you're practicing and everything else, if it's not full contact football, the speed's not the same. So I'm all for load management and preventing injuries and everything, but I do think there's a mental hurdle that you got to get over after you see that first action. But some of it is also, too, the practices, they start to get stale, especially for veteran players. You're going against the same guys every day. You know their strengths. You know their weaknesses. It starts to be a little bit of a stalemate at times, and you're not necessarily growing as much. For the Texans, where they hope to get a lot of that fresh blood and seeing another uniform but doing it safer is by having their combined practices. So over the next couple of weeks when they do their combined practices, they'll be, with the Rams, for instance, they'll juice it up a little bit more.
I want to come back to this because I feel like there's some value to playing in the games, because you get into that game day routine and you kind of understand like how to get your body ready, how you need to handle the day. Now, I think it's a little harder for this game because it's a night game. So, most of your games are going to be at noon. So I think the Texans do have like a noon preseason game. Like, I think it'll be really important for all those guys to play just so that they're used to getting up, getting ready to play in a game that kicks off at 12 and everything that comes with it.
It is weird. Going from, I played on the East Coast my first 5 years, And I'm an early riser by nature. And I came to Houston. I didn't think it would be a big deal at all. And it's 1 hour, you know, there shouldn't be it's weird. It's a big deal. Like everything feels different. And like, you have to train your body to actually get ready to go at noon as opposed to 1 p.m. And as small as it might seem, it's one of those little things that adds up over time. So I think there's some value in that. I guess the good thing is that now these days, like, all these college guys have played at times, you know, the West Coast guys, at least, a game that starts at like 11 a.m. So it's not like they're completely unfamiliar with it.
All right, we'll have more on Texans Bears, which will come up tonight at 7 from Canton. It is the Hall of Fame game, first of four preseason games for the Texans. Coming up next, though, C.J. Stroud's position on the NFL players list was revealed last night. We'll let you know where he came in and how good are players at ranking themselves. We'll talk about that next on Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Hi, Adam Spillane in for Sean Sethis here. And before I get to John Metchie, I did want to bring this up because we ended the last segment talking about just the importance of playing preseason games. And I've always been of the opinion that it does matter. Like, I know people are terrified of guys getting hurt, but I just think there is some inherent value to, like, playing in the fake games before you play in the real games.
Yeah, no, I think that getting up to speed mentally and getting your reaction times and everything, I think it helps. And it does. It also exposes some weaknesses that might not show up in training camp. And I used to get really frustrated with Bill O'Brien, because O'Brien would go into week one with his team all set, ready to go. These guys have been the starters since the first week of camp. And then all of a sudden, like after the Saints game on that Monday night opener a few years ago, they bench six guys after the first preseason, or after the first regular season game. There's a lot of reasons to do it. You've seen teams that are the teams that underperform in the first part of the season after they haven't played any of their starters during the preseason. I'm not 100% comfortable with how much load management goes into it these days. The Texans having an extra preseason game doesn't make me nervous about this specific game. And I think you can look, because it's a deeper team, you've got more genuine position battles than I think you've had in a long, long time. So it's cool for right now. I would hate to see them go through the entire preseason game with some of their more marquee brand starters or anybody else like Jalen Petrie. Jalen Petrie's been out there playing slot corner with the ones a whole bunch. He's played some safety too, but I don't think that he's proven that he's capable of being the full-time nickelback or slot corner. I think he's got to go out and do it against actual competition in real games. So if they decide that Jalen Petrie's a guy that doesn't have to play in preseason games, I think that's a big mistake.
There's an injury risk that, of course, comes with playing guys in a preseason game, but there's an injury risk playing guys in any football game. There's an injury risk in playing guys in any sort of a practice. So I feel like if that's your reason for not wanting to play your starters, then, I mean, what are we doing here?
Guys are going to get hurt. They'll get hurt in practice. Some of them will get hurt just, slipping on ice when they're up in Cleveland or something for a game. It happens, and that's the balance that you have to find. And it's just, in baseball, maybe you'd equate it to like, all right, you load manage baseball players, but it's not like you give them 2 weeks off, because after 2 weeks they've got to get their timing back and everything. There's not as much bang for the buck. I think a lot of teams have gone too far to the side of caution to where A, guys aren't mentally sharp, and B, like mentally sharp when they begin the season. And B, you don't actually know what you have and how well those guys actually play. And D'Amico mentioned the other day that some guys, like with the rookies, there's some guys that just shine when the lights come on, and you see this in camp all the time. There's guys that are camp heroes, and they're great in a practice environment, and then they just fall apart when they come into the actual game. And you don't know that. Now, that's with your younger guys usually. But likewise, there's also guys that don't practice all that well or aren't that impressive. It's not that they're not working hard or whatever, but there's just a switch that flips when they're playing tackle football. And you don't really get to see that unless you play in the game. So for some of these guys that are trying out new starting roles, or even some of the less marquee free agents, but you're coming in and expecting to rely on, I think there's a diagnostic element where you got to play them and see exactly what you have.
We'll talk about one of the guys that is expected to play in tonight's game in a second, but I wanted to go to the NFL Top 100 list, and they revealed what it was 29 through 20 yesterday, and C.J. Stroud came out number 20 on the NFL players list. And listen, it shows that you're respected amongst your peers, and there are some really good players that C.J. Stroud is ranked ahead. I just got to know from you, do you think this is too high? Do you think it's too low? And how far do you think C.J. Stroud can move? Like, are we talking about somebody who could be top three this time next year?
I think it's a little bit of a futures bet right now. And, I mean, look, this is based on the players' opinions. But I do think that when you hear other players, opposing players, talk about C.J. Stroud, the biggest thing that they're impressed by usually is just how advanced he was mentally. I mean, they'll talk about that. Usually with younger quarterbacks, guys are blown away by either their arm or their legs. And CJ makes some really impressive throws with his arms. Obviously, his legs aren't his calling card. But even those Colts linebackers, E.J. Speed and Zaire Franklin, that have kind of been playfully going back and forth with CJ all offseason, those guys were blown away by how well CJ was at getting to his third read, or making throws across the field to his third read, and some of that mental stuff. And remember that, plus in the second Colts game last year, there was that play where it looked like CJ was dead to rights for a sack. Then it looked like he was throwing the ball away. And then, it turns out that he was throwing it to Nico Collins. That stuff is the stuff that they really recognize. So I think if you look at If you look at last year statistically or the entirety of the season, it's not like CJ was a top 20 player for the whole season. I think players look at what he did, you know, after he came back from injury, after he came back from his concussion, and then did in the postseason against the Browns at least, and that's what really impressed them. So, yeah, if he builds on that, and because he's a quarterback, I would say that it would have to come with team success, I think, if the players are going to vote him as the number three in the top three. It would have to come with, like, the team also being really good. Because, like, part of this is, you know, there's a class president vote type of thing here, too. Sometimes the popular kid wins out over the guy that's most suited to be class president. And CJ right now is very, very popular. If the Texans take a step forward and they're a genuinely competitive, like, top six team in the NFL, I think it's almost a slam dunk that the players would vote him top three.
20-11 is what was announced yesterday. I said 20-29. It was 20-11. I'm just looking through some of these because you mentioned, like, the popular kid getting the getting the accolades. Brock Purdy is on here at number 28, and yeah. I feel like that's really high, and it shows you, because I think a lot of analysts don't have a ton of respect for Brock Purdy, and they see him as just a product of the Shanahan system, but the players, it looked like, have the opposite view of it.
Yeah, and I think that's another one of those things that's impossible to separate. It's that it's almost like when you're a quarterback on a team like that, when you're a young quarterback that's got that much talent offensively, that it's really hard to credit the guy, you know, obviously, for the whole success, especially when they've had success with Jimmy Garoppolo before that. But I think along the same lines, when you listen to defensive backs and linebackers talk about him, It's the tight window throws. It's some of the throws that he does make where it's not just a gimme, and it's not just, you know, it's not just Brandon Ayuk being wide open or something like that. That people are grudgingly coming around. I was one of them. I was not fully appreciative of Brock Purdy's stuff until last year, and I just started really going back and watching more total San Francisco games, and you see that, all right, it's not just him throwing up. Like, compared to, say, Tua Tagovailoa, I mean, Brock Purdy does way more to drive the offense than Tua Tagovailoa does. And I think Brock Purdy's able to deal with broken down plays and make plays late in the down, buy himself time and do all that in a way that I think Tua Tagovailoa can't. Where was Tua on this list? Do you remember vaguely where he was?
I don't. I don't have the whole thing. I only have, like, the each segment that's listed. But he's not. It doesn't look like he's in the top 30.
I don't think he's on the 36th best player, okay, According to the top 100 vote.
I think that's
about right. I think that in general, most players, as evidenced by this at least, they think a little bit more of Brock Purdy than Tua.
I will tell you, I was a little bit more sold on Purdy after the second half of the Lions game, and then I thought he was really good in the Super Bowl too.
So yeah,
that kind of sold me on him. Are NFL players, are players in general, good at ranking themselves?
No, awful.
So we should just take this with a grain of salt.
No, yeah, like the Pro Bowl vote is the worst. The Pro Bowl vote's the worst because, for one, you've got because the players vote, and for one, you know, like, you're voting against it's. I mean, there's an obvious conflict of interest, but really, like, if I'm a defensive tackle and I'm watching film all year, I see way more defensive tackles around the league on film than I will of, like, let's say we're playing the Colts and I want to watch Quentin Nelson, the offensive guard. I'm going to watch 4-6 games or so and a bunch of cut-ups of different situations of Quentin Nelson playing versus other defensive linemen. So I'll see, for every Quentin Nelson I see, I'll see, you know, the 20 other defensive tackles from the NFC, from the AFC, everywhere else. But, like, when it comes to the actual guys in your own, on your own schedule, you see a limited number of AFC guards. So I'm not gonna see a whole bunch of the other AFC guards. So you're biased towards guys in your division and guys, you know, the guys that are in your schedule from the AFC. So I've always felt that's really incomplete. Personnel directors would be the best guys to vote on that because they're looking around the entire league and they're looking at guys, you know, versus multiple different opponents. It's It's Sean and I argue about all this time about the validity of the NFL players' top 100. It's a popularity contest, and also playing in primetime games helps a lot, just because those are the players you see highlighted.
Or making highlight plays that wind up going viral on whatever social media that they're
yeah, that's
Instagram
true.
Or Twitter.
Yeah.
Texans-Bears tonight, the Hall of Fame game from Canton. You can hear it right here on Sports Radio 610. We don't know who exactly is going to play in this game. We know most of the starters won't, but John Mechie is expected to play. And here's Mechie talking about what he's kind of what he's taken into this training camp.
Yeah, I think just more comfortable overall. Of course, second year in the playbook, so you know it a lot more. You're not thinking at all when you're out there. My body feels a lot better. So now it's just having fun, really. I don't have to think about a new scheme, about being on the field, anything new. Like, now it's just completely having fun.
Yeah, he was really good both in the press conference and the other day, and then especially in his interview with John Lopez and Brandon Scott on the midday. They he's moving completely differently than we'd seen him before. I just think I've really enjoyed watching Stephon Diggs run a route in practice, and then John Mechie coming up behind him, and watching John Mechie and seeing some of the similarities with just how crisp and aggressively they get in and out of their breaks. And obviously Mechie's not the same as Diggs, but he looks a lot more like him this year than he did last year. And there's an upside there, I think, that you can see, okay, this is a guy who's drafted in the second round for a reason. And he was a guy that I don't think physically looked quite right last year when we saw him, even though he was out there practicing. But he had just finished up cancer treatment before he started training for football, before training camp began. And that's it's not so simple to go out and play. It's 6 weeks in the preseason and then 17 weeks of a regular season on into the playoffs. Well, your body's still kind of literally getting the poison out, all the stuff they do to your body to beat that cancer. It's just taxing. And he's just been moving differently. I know some people, I think Cody Stutes and I disagree a little on this. Cody Stutes from HoustonFootball.com. Cody's got some valid concerns about his drops. He's had quite a few drops in camp, and just the consistency, and maybe he looks better right now in one-on-ones and 7-on-7 than he does in the team drills. I happen to be more intrigued with his upside, and I think there's going to be times this year where one of those top three wide receivers are injured. I think there's more flash potential with John Mechie than there is from say a Ben Skoranek or an Xavier Hutchinson. So I'm higher on Mechie right now. I think most people are, but I think there's a few that are kind of just holding back on him. Where are you on that spectrum?
So I have been impressed by what I've seen in camp, but what Cody said is interesting, because there was a video of him beating somebody one-on-one. I can't remember who the DB was.
It was Kalen Bullock the other day that was really vicious.
I think this one was on Saturday.
Okay.
And he kind of caught the ball in his body, and you can kind of see it's a great move. It's a great move to get open, but you're not making that catch in traffic if you're catching the ball there. So he's got to do a better job. So I do agree that he's got the hands have to be a little better. He's got to tighten that up just a little bit. But the fact that he's getting open the way he has, and the fact that he's been able to win those matchups, I think that's a really good sign for what he can be this season. And like you said, this is essentially his first full NFL season. He was sick the first year. You can't really count last year because, again, he's just coming back. The guy had cancer. There's a lot. That's a physical and just mental grind that it's really hard to overcome. And the fact that he could go through that, still play football, is pretty impressive. And now he's a year removed from all that. So I think that he's got a chance to have a really good career. So I think that overall, I've been pretty impressed by him. All right, coming up next on Payne and Pendergast, we will go to headlines. The Texans, again, open up the preseason with the Bears, and then we'll touch on the Astros game last night, their win over the Pirates. That's next on Sports Radio 610.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, back on Payne and Pendergast, Adam Spillane in for Sean. Seth is here. Don't worry, Sean will be back for the pregame show, Texans and Bears. Which what time's pregame today? What time are you guys going
pregame on? Starts at 4. So Sean will be doing the pregame with me and the postgame with Clint. So our boss Parker decided to give him a reprieve this morning, so he wouldn't do four shows in what, 28 hours? He's gonna give him a little break.
I think he would have been on the air for like 16 of 28 hours, which seems like a lot. So probably good to give him a little bit of time. Give him 4 hours off.
The tough thing is the post-game show, you know, go until like 1 in the morning or so, and then he's got to turn around to do the 6 a.m. show. I'll pick it up by being extra stupid and hyper and goofy on Friday morning, hopefully after a glorious Texans preseason victory.
The Sharps are on the Texans. We were talking about the Degenerates earlier. The line opened at Bears -1.5. It has moved to Texans -1.5,
ooh,
in case you're interested.
So, that's respect right there.
Yeah. Now, part of that might be because the Bears aren't going to play any of their starters. Now, I don't think the Texans will either, but I guess if you're looking at the quarterback matchup, who's better, Tyson Bagent or Davis Mills? I guess the bettors out there believe that it's that Davis Mills is the better of the two quarterbacks.
Right. So if you can beat Tyson Bagent, you can beat Pat Mahomes any day. I'll feel super confident about Davis Mills after this game. I am anticipating like a much more efficient version of Davis Mills, perhaps. I think this second year in the system, even though he's been really impressive at times out there at practice, but he's also been erratic on some of the simple throws. That's a cause for concern. But we just, I got to see him with an actual offense around him, playing tackle football, and then maybe going against some lesser backup defensive backs.
I feel like, and you've been out there more, so you can answer this a little bit better, but I feel like most of the turnovers that has been committed by the offense have been committed by Davis Mills. Is that accurate?
I think that's probably fair. I don't, you know, as of the last week or so, CJ's thrown some interceptions that I'm not sure, like, I don't know if I would count them as interceptions all the time, because frankly, he would have been sacked a lot. And so that's a whole nother topic of conversation, is just this offensive line and where they are right now. So I think there's times where he's said, like, all right, it's a sack, I'm just going to throw it anyway. And he's thrown some riskier balls than he would in a game. And I'm cool with that, because he's not at a point in his career where he needs to be worried about how it's going to look, how it's going to look to the coaches if he throws an interception. It's good to experiment with some of this stuff right now.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers always said that he did not care about interceptions in practice during training camp, because you want to be able to see what you can get away with, and you want to see.
Yeah, especially with your rookies.
Yes.
I remember Marcus Mariota, they were making a huge deal out of him his rookie year, because he hadn't thrown an interception yet. And a lot of former NFL quarterbacks are like, I'm not so sure that's a good thing. That sounds like he might be a little bit what he'll eventually become, which is a guy who's scared of his own shadow. That he's too conservative, he's too scared, he's not making the tough throws.
So the moral of the story is, the more interceptions you throw during training camp, the better you're going to be.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Remember when Davis Mills threw like 4 interceptions in a practice his rookie year? And that became a huge debate point, whether we should care about it or not. Sometimes it's a sign that your quarterback's not that good. And sometimes it's a sign that the guy's just testing the boundaries and taking chances and learning from his mistakes.
I don't remember that. I just remember Jeff Driscoll like breaking a television camera.
Well, Okay, Davis Mills is not at Jeff Driscoll level. Jeff Driscoll, when we were out there and we were wondering, like, how, like, are they going to keep up with the charade? It was, you could with almost 97% accuracy, without watching who threw the football, know that it was a Driscoll throw. Because you'd be like, what the hell was that? Oh, okay, Driscoll threw it. You know, because sometimes you want to zero in and you're watching a receiver versus a defensive back, and you're not even paying attention to who the quarterback is. You could tell which ones the Jeff Driscoll throws were.
Those were some disgusting. Good memories right there.
Yeah, those were the dark days, my friends. Yeah.
All right, Texans and Bears tonight from Canton Hall of Fame game, first of 4 preseason games for the Texans. And, of course, you can hear it right here on Sports Radio 610. Astros ended a 3-game losing skid last night. They beat the Pirates 5-4. It was Mauricio Dubon coming up big when the Astros needed him most.
Dubon drives one deep to left field. He settled that pitch and he gives the Astros the lead. 5-4 Astros. Doobie off the bench with a pinch hit. Huge home run.
It was a fun little chess match between Joe Espada and Derek Shelton, the Pirates manager. They used Dubon as a pinch hitter. The Pirates go back to their bullpen. They had a lefty in there. They brought in the righty, Colin Holderman, who's been really good for them this season. And Dubon homered on the very first pitch of the game, but he was not trying to hit. He was not trying to hit the ball out of the park.
I got to the big leagues hitting everybody, so it didn't matter for me. It was just, you know, just going there and, like I said, try to make something happen. I was not trying to hit a home run. I was not trying to hit a home run. You know, trying to get a base for the guys, and ended up catching.
I thought that last night, Aside from O'Neill Cruz, the shortstop, being the MVP overall because he had two really bad errors that allowed the Astros to get back into the game, Framber's showing some of that mental toughness that he has now that he never had early in his career. Last night was, you know, as he's dealing with an umpire who is erratic as hell at home plate. He got shelled in the second inning, got nailed with a pitch clock violation that was dubious and reined it all in and ended up giving a good performance. And then Espada and some of his in-game decisions, small ball, all of that, I feel way better about him now than I did in the first 2 months of the season. I think once they got rid of Abreu and they could start freeing guys up to use different pinch hitters and everything, it just had more options. I feel a lot better about Espada than I did before.
We'll talk about this in the next segment, but Espada is doing some things. Like, there are some clear differences between Joe Espada and Dusty Baker, and we'll get to those a little bit later. On the pitch clock violation, it was a violation for a quick pitch.
Yeah.
And I think the Astros thought that Framber should have gotten a warning, because generally you get a warning, and then if you do it a second time, that's when they dock you for the ball. But that wasn't the case. And so the home plate umpire is Nestor Ceja. He threw out the Pirates hitting coach after the third pitch of the game. I know his brother. His brother might be the nicest person on the planet.
Ceja's brother?
Yes. His brother was a pitcher in the Rockies organization. Such a nice guy. Really nice guy. Yeah. So I always am happy to see Nestor, because I know how nice of a guy Moises was.
Okay, but that doesn't help. And honestly, I think he hurt the Pirates in terms of strike calls and ball calls. I think he hurt the Pirates more than he hurt the Astros last night. I think one of the problems Framber had in the second inning was that he'd gotten his control, but he was just a little too, he was throwing strikes, like perfect strikes, and getting shelled because of it. The adjustments the pitcher has to make when he can't trust the umpire get a little bit dicey, even though he'd had the benefit of some bad calls that were called strikes for him.
Yeah, he was definitely in the zone a little too much. They ambushed him, but he did recover. And that's the big thing, is that, you know, when you have an inning, when you blow up the way that he did in the second inning, you still have to be able to recover, because you still have to get through the rest of your start. And he did that. He was able to get them through six, and they went to the bullpen with the lead. And, you know, it was not exactly easy, at least for Ryan Pressly. That was kind of a grinded out eighth inning for Pressly, but he was able to throw up a zero, and then Hader did the same.
I look at last night's victory in a very impressive come-from-behind fashion, where Mauricio Dubon ends up being one of the heroes. I look at that as the spark of another good stretch, where if you think about the era of the Jim Crane / Jeff Bagwell GM, Jose Abreu and Rafael Montero were the two most horrendous signings. The fact that after they got rid of Abreu, the Astros went on a tear, and now the fact that after they DFA'd Montero, they kind of exorcised some of the demons. This has no actual basis in fact or anything like that. It gives me a good feeling that, okay, Dana Brown was able to convince Jim Crane to move on from your mistakes, and you can, however you feel about the trade for Kikuchi, They're a team that's got all their eyes, like, they're looking towards the future now. They don't have to deal with any of those mistakes that they made a couple years ago.
And if you missed it, the Astros did DFA Rafael Montero before yesterday's game. However, they are hoping that when he clears waivers, he will accept an assignment back to AAA so that they can work on some stuff. So they're not fully ruling out that he can come back and contribute to the team, but they want him to go work on some stuff in AAA. But again, the option is his. Like, he can refuse a minor league assignment if he wants, and he can elect free agency. But according to Dana Brown and Joe Espada yesterday, Montero seemed receptive to the idea of going back to AAA. So we'll have to wait and see on that.
I think both with Montero and Abreu, it's not like they're jerks that are unaware of the issues or anything. And it's not Montero's fault that Jim Crane made him the fourth highest paid reliever in baseball when they gave him that contract. It's just that, man, they were bad contracts, more so than a reflection on anything Abreu or Montero themselves did. If I had found out that Abreu was just like playing video games in the clubhouse all day or something and was a jerk to his teammates, then I could have gotten mad at Abreu. If I found out that Montero was like mean to little old ladies, then I could be mad at Montero. It's just that was the news alert is, GMs around the league are more secure in their jobs now because the Astros have helped teams realize, oh yeah, we definitely need a GM. We, at the very least, we need a GM.
Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Coming up next, the Astros introduced Yusei Kikuchi before last night's game. He will start for them on Friday against the Rays. Are we feeling different about that trade 48 hours later? That's next on Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, back on Payne and Pendergast. Adam Spillane in for Sean. Seth is here. Don't worry, Sean will be back for the pregame show. Texans yeah. and Bears, which, what time's pregame today? What time are you guys going
pregame on? Starts at 4. So Sean will be doing the pregame with me and the postgame with Clint. So our boss, Parker, decided to give him a reprieve this morning so he wouldn't do four shows in what 28 hours. He's gonna give him a little break.
I think he would have been on the air for like 16 of 28 hours, which seems like a lot, so probably good to give him a little bit of time. Give him four
the tough thing is the post game show, you know, go until like 1 a.m. or so, and then he's got to turn around to do the 6 a.m. show. I'll pick it up by being extra stupid and hyper and goofy on Friday morning. Hopefully after a glorious Texans preseason victory.
The Sharps are on the Texans. We were talking about the Degenerates earlier. The line opened at Bears -1.5. It has moved to Texans -1.5 in case you're interested.
So that's respect right there.
Yeah. Now, part of that might be because the Bears aren't going to play any of their starters. Now, I don't think the Texans will either. But I guess if you're looking at the quarterback matchup, who's better, Tyson Bagent or Davis Mills? I guess the bettors out there believe that it's that Davis Mills is the better of the two quarterbacks.
Right. So if you can beat Tyson Bagent, you can beat Pat Mahomes any day. I'll feel super confident about Davis Mills after this game. I am anticipating like a much more efficient version of Davis Mills, perhaps. I think this second year in the system, even though he's been really impressive at times out there at practice, but he's also been erratic on some of the simple throws that's a cause for concern. But I got to see him with an actual offense around him, playing tackle football, and then maybe going against some lesser backup defensive backs.
I feel like, and you've been out there more, so you can answer this a little bit better, but I feel like most of the turnovers that has been committed by the offense have been committed by Davis Mills. Is that accurate?
I think that's probably fair. I don't, you know, as of the last week or so, CJ's thrown some interceptions, and I'm not sure, like, I don't know if I would count them as interceptions all the time, because frankly, he would have been sacked a lot. And so that's a whole nother topic of conversation, is just this offensive line and where they are right now. So I think there's times where he's said, like, all right, it's a sack, I'm just going to throw it anyway. And he's thrown some riskier balls than he would in a game. And I'm cool with that, because he's not at a point in his career where he needs to be worried about how it's going to look, how it's going to look to the coaches if he throws an interception. It's good to experiment with some of this stuff right now.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers always said that he did not care about interceptions in practice during training camp, because you want to be able to see what you can get away with, and you want to
yeah, especially with your rookies.
Yes,
I remember Marcus Mariota. They were making a huge deal out of him his rookie year because he hadn't thrown an interception yet, and a lot of former NFL quarterbacks are like, I'm not so sure that's a good thing. That sounds like he might be a little bit what he'll eventually become, which is a guy who's scared of his own shadow. That he's too conservative, he's too scared, he's not making the tough throws.
So the moral of the story is, the more interceptions you throw during training camp, the better you're going to be.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Remember when Davis Mills threw like 4 interceptions in a practice his rookie year? And that became a huge debate point, whether we should care about it or not. Sometimes it's a sign that your quarterback's not that good. And sometimes it's a sign that the guy's just testing the boundaries and taking chances and learning from his mistakes.
I don't remember that. I just remember Jeff Driskel like breaking a television camera.
Well, Jeff, Davis Mills is not at Jeff Driskel level. Jeff Driskel, when we were out there and we were wondering, like, how like are they going to keep up with the charade? You could, with almost 97% accuracy, without watching who threw the football, know that it was a Driskel throw. Because you'd be like, what the hell was that? Oh, okay, Driskel threw it. You know, because sometimes you want to zero in and you're watching a receiver versus a defensive back, and you're not even paying attention to who the quarterback is. You could tell which ones the Jeff Driskel throws were.
Those were some disgusting. Good memories right there.
Yeah, those were the dark days, my friends. Yeah.
All right, Texans and Bears tonight from Canton Hall of Fame game, first of 4 preseason games for the Texans, and of course, you can hear it right here on Sports Radio 610. Astros ended a 3-game losing skid last night. They beat the Pirates 5-4. It was Mauricio Dubon coming up big when the Astros needed him most.
Dubon drives one deep to left field. He settled that pitch and he gives the Astros the lead. 5-4 Astros. Doobie off the bench with a pinch hit. Huge home run.
It was a fun little chess match between Joe Espada and Derek Shelton, the Pirates manager. They used Dubon as a pinch hitter. The Pirates go back to their bullpen. They had a lefty in there. They brought in the righty, Colin Holderman, who's been really good for them this season. And Dubon homered on the very first pitch of the game, but he was not trying to hit it. He was not trying to hit the ball out of the park.
I got to the big leagues hitting everybody, so it didn't matter for me. It was just going there. And like I said, trying to make something happen. I was not trying to hit a home run. You know, trying to get on base for the guys, and ended up catching.
I thought that last night, aside from O'Neill Cruz, the shortstop, being the MVP overall, because he had 2 really bad errors that allowed the Astros to get back into the game, Framber showing some of that mental toughness that he has now that he never had early in his career. Last night was, you know, as he's dealing with an umpire who is erratic as hell at home plate. He got shelled in the second inning. Got nailed with a pitch clock violation that was dubious and reined it all in and ended up giving a good performance. And then Espada and some of his in-game decisions, small ball, all of that. I feel way better about him now than I did in the first 2 months of the season. I think once they got rid of Abreu and they could start freeing guys up to use different pinch hitters and everything, it just had more options. I feel good about it. I feel a lot better about Espada than I did before.
We'll talk about this in the next segment, but Espada is doing some things. Like, there are some clear differences between Joe Espada and Dusty Baker, and we'll get to those a little bit later. On the pitch clock violation, it was a violation for a quick pitch.
Yeah.
And I think the Astros thought that Fromber should have gotten a warning, because generally you get a warning, and then if you do it a second time, that's when they dock you for the ball. But that wasn't the case. And so the home plate umpire is Nestor Ceja. He threw out the Pirates hitting coach after the third pitch of the game. I know his brother. His brother might be the nicest person on the planet.
Ceja's brother?
Yes. His brother was a pitcher in the Rockies organization. Such a nice guy. Really nice guy. Yeah. So I always am happy to see Nestor, because I know how nice of a guy Moises was.
Okay, but that doesn't help. And honestly, I think he hurt the Pirates in terms of strike calls and ball calls. I think he hurt the Pirates more than he hurt the Astros last night. I just don't. Although, I think one of the problems Framber had in the second inning was that he'd gotten his control, but he was just a little too. He was throwing strikes, like perfect strikes, and getting shelled because of it. That's the adjustments the pitcher has to make when he can't trust the umpire get a little bit dicey. Even though he'd had the benefit of some bad calls that were called strikes for him.
Yeah, he was definitely in the zone a little too much. They ambushed him, but he did recover. That's the big thing, is that, you know, when you have an inning, when you blow up the way that he did in the second inning, you still have to be able to recover, because you still have to get through the rest of your start. And he did that. He was able to get them through six, and they went to the bullpen with the lead. And, you know, it was not exactly easy, at least for Ryan Pressly. That was kind of a grinded out eighth inning for Pressly, but he was able to throw up a zero, and then Hader did the same.
I look at last night's victory in a very impressive come-from-behind fashion, where Mauricio Dubon ends up being one of the heroes. I look at that as the spark of another good stretch, where if you think about the era of the Jim Crane / Jeff Bagwell GM, Jose Abreu and Rafael Montero were the two most horrendous signings. The fact that after they got rid of Abreu, the Astros went on a tear, and now the fact that after they DFA'd Montero, they kind of exercised some of the demons. This has no actual basis in fact or anything like that. It gives me a good feeling that, okay, Dana Brown was able to convince Jim Crane to move on from your mistakes, and you can, however you feel about the trade for Kikuchi, they're a team that's got all their eyes, like they're looking towards the future now. They don't have to deal with any of those mistakes that they made a couple years ago.
And if you missed it, the Astros did DFA Rafael Montero before yesterday's game. However, they are hoping that when he clears waivers, he will accept an assignment back to AAA so that they can work on some stuff. So they're not fully ruling out that he can come back and contribute to the team, but they want him to go work on some stuff in AAA. But again, the option is his. Like, he can refuse a minor league assignment if he wants, and he can elect free agency. But according to Dana Brown and Joe Espada yesterday, Montero seemed receptive to the idea of going back to AAA. So we'll have to wait and see on that.
I think both with Montero and Abreu, it's not like they're jerks that are unaware of the issues or anything. And it's not Montero's fault that Jim Crane made him the fourth highest paid reliever in baseball when they gave him that contract. It's just that, man, they were bad contracts, more so than a reflection on anything Abreu or Montero themselves did. If I had found out that Abreu was just like playing video games in the clubhouse all day or something and was a jerk to his teammates, then I could have gotten mad at Abreu. If I found out that Montero was like mean to little old ladies, then I could be mad at Montero. It's just the news alert is, GMs around the league are more secure in their jobs now because the Astros have helped teams realize, oh yeah, we definitely need a GM. We, at the very least, we need a GM.
Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Coming up next, the Astros introduced Yusei Kikuchi before last night's game. He will start for them on Friday against the Rays. Are we feeling different about that trade 48 hours later? That's next on Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, back on Payne and Pendergast, Adam Spillane in for Sean. Seth is here. Don't worry, Sean will be back for the pregame show, Texans and Bears. What time's pregame today? What time are you guys going?
Pregame starts at 4, So Sean will be doing the pregame with me and the postgame with Clint. So our boss, Parker, decided to give him a reprieve this morning so he wouldn't do four shows in, what, 28 hours? He's gonna give him a little break.
I think he would have been on the air for like 16 of 28 hours, which seems like a lot. So probably good to give him a little bit of time. Give him four
hours The tough thing is the postgame show, you know, go until like 1 in the morning or so, and then he's got to turn around to do the 6 a.m. show. I'll pick it up by being extra stupid and hyper and goofy on Friday morning, hopefully after a glorious Texans preseason victory.
The Sharps are on the Texans. We were talking about the Degenerates earlier. The line opened at Bears -1.5. It has moved to Texans -1.5,
ooh,
in case you're interested.
So, that's respect right there.
Yeah. Now, part of that might be because the Bears aren't going to play any of their starters. Now, I don't think the Texans will either, but I guess if you're looking at the quarterback matchup, who's better, Tyson Bagent or Davis Mills? I guess the bettors out there believe that it's that Davis Mills is the better of the two quarterbacks.
Right. So if you can beat Tyson Bagent, you can beat Pat Mahomes any day. I'll feel super confident about Davis Mills after this game. I am anticipating like a much more efficient version of Davis Mills, perhaps. I think this second year in the system, even though he's been really impressive at times out there at practice, but he's also been erratic on some of the simple throws. That's a cause for concern, but I got to see him with an actual offense around him, playing tackle football, and then maybe going against some lesser backup defensive backs.
I feel like, and you've been out there more, so you can answer this a little bit better, but I feel like most of the turnovers that has been committed by the offense have been committed by Davis Mills. Is that accurate?
I think that's probably fair. I don't, you know, as of the last week or so, CJ's thrown some interceptions, and I'm not sure, like, I don't know if I would count them as interceptions all the time, because frankly, he would have been sacked a lot. And so that's a whole nother topic of conversation, is just this offensive line and where they are right now. So I think there's times where he's said, like, all right, it's a sack, I'm just going to throw it anyway. And he's thrown some riskier balls than he would in a game. And I'm cool with that, because he's not at a point in his career where he needs to be worried about how it's going to look, how it's going to look to the coaches if he throws an interception. It's good to experiment with some of this stuff right now.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers always said that he did not care about interceptions in practice during training camp, because you want to be able to see what you can get away with, and you want to see.
Yeah, especially with your rookies.
Yes.
I remember Marcus Mariota, they were making a huge deal out of him his rookie year, because he hadn't thrown an interception yet. And a lot of former NFL quarterbacks are like, I'm not so sure that's a good thing. That sounds like he might be a little bit what he'll eventually become, which is a guy who's scared of his own shadow. That he's too conservative, he's too scared, he's not making the tough throws.
So the moral of the story is, the more interceptions you throw during training camp, the better you're going to be.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Remember when Davis Mills threw like four interceptions in a practice his rookie year? And that became a huge debate point, whether we should care about it or not. Sometimes it's a sign that your quarterback's not that good. And sometimes it's a sign that the guy's just testing the boundaries and taking chances and learning from his mistakes.
I don't remember that. I just remember Jeff Driscoll like breaking a television camera.
Well, Okay, Davis Mills is not at Jeff Driscoll level. Jeff Driscoll, when we were out there and we were wondering, like, how, like, are they going to keep up with the charade? It was, you could with almost 97% accuracy, without watching who threw the football, know that it was a Driscoll throw. Because you'd be like, what the hell was that? Oh, okay, Driscoll threw it. You know, because you might, sometimes you want to zero in and you're watching a receiver versus a defensive back, and you're not even paying attention to who the quarterback is. You could tell which ones the Jeff Driscoll throws were.
Those were some disgusting. Good memories right there.
Yeah, those were the dark days, my friends. Yeah.
All right, Texans and Bears tonight from Canton Hall of Fame game, first of four preseason games for the Texans, and of course, you can hear it right here on Sports Radio 610. Astros ended a three-game losing skid last night. They beat the Pirates 5-4. It was Mauricio Dubon coming up big when the Astros needed him most.
Dubon drives one deep to left field. He settled that pitch and he gives the Astros the lead. 5-4 Astros. Doobie off the bench with a pinch hit. Huge home run.
It was a fun little chess match between Joe Espada and Derek Shelton, the Pirates manager. They used Dubon as a pinch hitter. The Pirates go back to their bullpen. They had a lefty in there. They brought in the righty, Colin Holderman, who's been really good for them this season. And Dubon homered on the very first pitch of the game, but he was not trying to hit the ball out of the park.
I got to the big leagues hitting everybody, so it didn't matter for me. It was just, you know, just going there and, like I said, trying to make something happen. I was not trying to hit a home run. I was not trying to hit a home run, you know, trying to get on base for the guys and ended up catching.
I thought that last night, aside from O'Neill Cruz, the shortstop, being the MVP overall because he had two really bad errors that allowed the Astros to get back into the game, Framber's showing some of that mental toughness that he has now that he never had early in his career. Last night was, you know, as he's dealing with an umpire who is erratic as hell at home plate. He got shelled in the second inning, got nailed with a pitch clock violation that was dubious and reined it all in and ended up giving a good performance. And then Espada and some of his in-game decisions, small ball, all of that, I feel way better about him now than I did in the first 2 months of the season. I think once they got rid of Abreu and they could start freeing guys up to use different pinch hitters and everything, it just had more options. I feel a lot better about Espada than I did before.
We'll talk about this in the next segment, but Espada is doing some things. Like, there are some clear differences between Joe Espada and Dusty Baker, and we'll get to those a little bit later. On the pitch clock violation, it was a violation for a quick pitch.
Yeah.
And I think the Astros thought that Framber should have gotten a warning, because generally you get a warning, and then if you do it a second time, that's when they dock you for the ball. But that wasn't the case. And so the home plate umpire is Nestor Ceja.
He
threw out the Pirates hitting coach after the third pitch of the game. I know his brother. His brother might be the nicest person on the planet.
Ceja's brother?
Yes. His brother was a pitcher in the Rockies organization. Such a nice guy. Really nice
really?
Guy. Yeah. So I always am happy to see Nestor, because I know how nice of a guy Moises was.
Okay, but that doesn't help. And honestly, I think he hurt the Pirates in terms of strike calls and ball calls. I think he hurt the Pirates more than he hurt the Astros last night. I think one of the problems Framber had in the second inning was that he'd gotten his control, but he was just a little too, he was throwing strikes, like perfect strikes, and getting shelled because of it. That's the adjustments the pitcher has to make when he can't trust the umpire get a little bit dicey, even though he'd had the benefit of some bad calls that were called strikes for him.
Yeah, he was definitely in the zone a little too much. They ambushed him, but he did recover. And that's the big thing, is that, you know, when you have an inning, when you blow up the way that he did in the second inning, you still have to be able to recover, because you still have to get through the rest of your start. And he did that. He was able to get them through six, and they went to the bullpen with the lead. And, you know, it was not exactly easy, at least for Ryan Pressly. That was kind of a grinded out eighth inning for Pressly, but he was able to throw up a zero, and then Hader did the same.
I look at last night's victory in a very impressive come from behind fashion, where Mauricio Dubon ends up being one of the heroes. I look at that as the spark of another good stretch, where if you think about the era of the Jim Crane / Jeff Bagwell GM, Jose Abreu and Rafael Montero were the two most horrendous signings. The fact that after they got rid of Abreu, the Astros went on a tear, and now the fact that after they DFA'd Montero, they kind of exercised some of the demons. This has no actual basis in fact or anything like that. It gives me a good feeling that, okay, Dana Brown was able to convince Jim Crane to move on from your mistakes, and you can, however you feel about the trade for Kikuchi, they're a team that's got all their eyes, like they're looking towards the future now. They don't have to deal with any of those mistakes that they made a couple years ago.
And if you missed it, the Astros did DFA Rafael Montero before yesterday's game. However, they are hoping that when he clears waivers, he will accept an assignment back to AAA so that they can work on some stuff. So they're not fully ruling out that he can come back and contribute to the team, but they want him to go work on some stuff in AAA. But again, the option is his. Like, he can refuse a minor league assignment if he wants, and he can elect free agency. But according to Dana Brown and Joe Espada yesterday, Montero seemed receptive to the idea of going back to AAA. So we'll have to wait and see on that.
I think both with Montero and Abreu, it's not like they're jerks that are unaware of the issues or anything. And it's not Montero's fault that Jim Crane made him the fourth highest paid reliever in baseball when they gave him that contract. It's just that, man, they were bad contracts, more so than a reflection on anything Abreu or Montero themselves did. If I had found out that Abreu was just like playing video games in the clubhouse all day or something and was a jerk to his teammates, then I could have gotten mad at Abreu. If I found out that Montero was like mean to little old ladies, then I could be mad at Montero. It's just the news alert is GMs around the league are more secure in their jobs now because the Astros have helped teams realize, oh yeah, we definitely need a GM. We, at the very least, we need a GM.
Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Coming up next, the Astros introduced Yusei Kikuchi before last night's game. He will start for them on Friday against the Rays. Are we feeling different about that trade 48 hours later? That's next on Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's not just about watching the game, it's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it, it's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.